Final hour of Robbie and Rexrode here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Robbie Stanley, Joe Rexrode, Ryan Porth taking you through this Tuesday morning here in Nashville, Tennessee. And it's that time of the week. We go to our 102.5 The Game phone line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com, and bring in our good friend Charles Robinson from Yahoo Sports. Charles, what's going on, man? How you doing?
I'm doing well. We all woke up this morning to Joe Flacco becoming one of the top 20 passing yardage players in history. His last couple games, he's moved past both Johnny Unitas and Joe Montana like we all thought he would.
And Charles, oh my gosh, you know, just elite numbers there from Joe Flacco. Really good to see last night.
Last night, that was pretty bizarre. That game was – I could not imagine the Patriots trailing like that in the fourth quarter. But the world, you know, was corrected. Good to see the Patriots get themselves back where they needed to be, and obviously the Jets get themselves right back on track for Trevor Lawrence.
Last night was a great night for being on a morning radio show and having to just go to bed. Great night for that.
No doubt. How are you guys doing today?
Oh, we're doing very well, Charles. And we want to start with a big matchup this week. Obviously, Titans fans very excited about Thursday Night Football. The Colts and the Titans this Thursday. What do you make of that matchup and how the Titans, what their chances are against the Colts?
Well, you know, the Colts are interesting. They've been definitely a team that's a little more up and down than you know, I thought they would be. I thought, you know, they'd have found some consistency with Jonathan Taylor by now. That hasn't really happened. You know, Phillip Rivers has been up and down. It's a hard team to peg. You know, I wouldn't be stunned if the Colts, their second half schedule is tough. Like it's kind of a meat grinder. So I wouldn't be surprised if the Colts end up being a team that, you know, kind of hits the skids in the second half of the season and ends up, you know, falling out of the playoffs. But I think at the end of the day, what's going to matter for the Titans, you know, Rivers, I feel like the Colts, when you watch Rivers, you can tell this is a team that's going to have to draft a quarterback because Phillip's making a lot of the same mistakes that he was making, you know, with the Chargers. He's good for a couple bad interceptions. You know, if he can have a good game, but the next game he'll throw under triple coverage. You know, his athleticism was never really great. I think it's kind of hitting an all-time low. It's definitely a very winnable game, you know, for the Tennessee Titans. And I think when you kind of look at the Titans schedule, you know, I feel like this is one that I guess when I look at the Titans and I think about the second half of the season, you try to think about, you know, how can this team really get better? You know, where are things going to improve? And I know we've talked about Clowney in the past. I feel like if that knee injury, has consistently, you know, he's obviously hasn't been in practice. It's clearly something's not right there. And if you got to shut the guy down, to get him right, you know, you just got to do it. And you're going to have to figure out a way to obviously, you know, generate some kind of a pass rush or something, you know, without him and moving on from Vic Beasley and, you know, figuring out, I think you got a rookie first round pick on the offensive line. You got to get him, you know, ready at some point in the set. Like, that's a guy who's got to play at some point because you need some depth there, you know. And I think this is really where it starts. I mean, I think this is where the fine-tuning starts for Tennessee. You start load management with Derrick Henry. It's just I think this is where you dial things in as far as how you want to be, you know, health-wise for the playoffs and – you know, what players you've got to start to get some production out of. And I really do. I think when you look at that offensive line, you got to get something out of the kid you draft in the first round. You got to figure out a way to get Clowney healthy for that last quarter of the season or the playoffs, you know, wherever you're looking at your schedule and thinking, we got to add this guy.
Yeah, so both these teams hope to be, you know, building toward the postseason, toward contending, hanging around the AFC. I know Buffalo just had an impressive win. Baltimore has been mostly really good. I still look at the AFC, Charles, and I think it's Kansas City and everyone. I mean, when it comes down to it, we get the postseason. Okay. But let me ask you about the NFC. Who is the best team in the NFC?
Good luck. figure. I mean, it's that is a division where, you know, I think your AFC read is completely accurate. I think the Chiefs have kind of put themselves on a plateau above everybody else. But again, I think this is also, once again, when you talk about the Colts game, this is where the Titans can kind of establish themselves firmly in that second tier and figuring out what are the pieces that are going to make them better. The NFC, I mean, you just look across the board and all the good teams, there's some kind of a fundamental flaw. Everybody at some point has shown, you know, Seattle's defense is prone to giving up a lot of points. They're, you know, they're adding pieces obviously right now. We'll see, you know, how Dunlap works out long term. We'll see if Jamal Adams returning, you know, to the roster can do something for them. But, you know, that was a team I thought could have added a corner. Didn't do it, has had, you know, issues there and defensively could end up having issues long term. You know, New Orleans has been I think they've been up and down. I think New Orleans sort of has the disease that Tampa Bay does, where teams know that both Drew Brees and Tom Brady, and I think Brady really showed it in that game against New Orleans, you hit these guys and the effectiveness of them as quarterbacks declines pretty quickly. And they're not, when you look at the upper echelon of quarterbacks this year, and I would put Tannehill in that group, they're not these guys who can manufacture plays, who can, you know, create things with their legs, who can be, you know, just give that extra dimension for defenses to worry about. They're the old, you know, they're really that old school bunch of quarterbacks where they're stationary guys. You hit them, you get in their face often enough. If you can figure out a way to bring middle pressure in the line, you know, they're going to have issues. I mean, Green Bay, maybe if you want to talk about the team that to me has probably, maybe not defensively, hung, you know, the longest and really Seattle. I mean, Aaron Rodgers, it's weird. Like, he's playing so far beyond what I thought, you know, he could really reach this season. I felt like this is a guy who's in the winter of his career. They didn't add a lot around him offensively, and yet they're figuring out, you know, beyond Devontae Adams to make a lot of role players, make that offense just more functional than I ever thought. I watched him in the NFC. I was at the NFC Championship game last year. I looked at Rodgers, and I'm like, man, this guy's a function now of the players around him. And he completely reversed it. All those guys, other than Adams, I mean, Adams was great, but all those other guys are a function of Aaron Rodgers looking as, I mean, he looks like he's, I don't know, the 32, 33-year-old Aaron Rodgers, where we were like, man, this guy's unbelievable. How long can he do this?
Charles Robinson from Yahoo Sports on the line with us, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. And obviously, Charles, some big news last week that you broke with the Raiders being fined $500,000 by the NFL, Gruden being fined $150,000, and the team being stripped of a sixth-round draft pick. Just kind of take us behind the scenes of how the NFL came to that decision there with the Raiders.
I mean, the Raiders just kept screwing up. I mean, there's really no other way to put it. I mean, they've had so many issues with, you know, obviously John Gruden with, you know, the mask stuff on the sidelines early on, having told, you know, the Raiders being one of those teams where they just, the league sent the memo out and made sure to remind everybody, hey, get it right. John didn't. And then, you know, the Darren Waller event where all the charity event where all the pictures surfaced of all the players, you know, not socially distancing, not wearing masks. Trent Brown has just been, you know, you talk to people in the organization and they're like, he's the gift that keeps giving, like in the worst possible way. Like they're paying him all this money. He's gone on the COVID list twice now. And the last one, it was, you know, he wasn't wearing his tracking device. And so it gave them all these issues with contact tracing. And I'll tell you what, that is one thing that I think the league, as irritated as they are about masks and having to constantly ride people out masks, they do not play around with the contact tracing thing. And if, you know, I can just say the remainder of this season, when teams get into some trouble and if there's a player who's not wearing his tracking device, and particularly, and it appeared Trent Brown was, it was like willful violation. Like he just wasn't doing it, didn't want to do it. And that really irritated the league, and I think that was what caused them to fine the Raiders so heavily and then fine John. And, you know, Gruden's furious about this, but I think the league is looking at head coaches and saying, like, hey, look, you're the one who stands up in front of the players. And so if you have a guy who does something like not wear his tracking device, and when you go to do contact tracing, it creates all these problems. Like, you don't even – you have to quarantine your entire offensive line and then really not even know. Maybe there are other people out there that he was in contact with that, you know, you have to go through all this footage, and it just creates a mess. So they just told the Raiders, like, we're sick of this. We're tired of it, and if this – we're going to keep graduating fines, and other teams are going to have to see this and figure it out. And after I wrote the story, what was interesting is just the number of other, like, general managers or front office people that were texting, just like, whoa, like, this is – it clearly made people sit up and go, okay, they're not playing around. Like, they're going to keep ratcheting up these fines. What was funny, though, was they sent out that memo on Tuesday about the enhanced, you know, COVID protocols, and, hey, if, you know, they really hammered down on this mask thing where it's like, hey, if the game ends and people are talking to each other on the field, they have to wear masks. They even, the word must have masks, and they underlined it. Nobody did it. it was like it didn't even exist. And the thing was, they said, you're going to be held accountable. There's going to be a level of accountability for teams that don't do this. I don't know what they're going to do now, because almost nobody followed it. So I guess I'm waiting to see if there's, you know, the owners are meeting today virtually. I'm waiting to see if there's a, you know, the commissioner saying to the owners, like, hey, you need to get together with your teams, and we're serious about this. We're going to give you one warning on this. And if this happens again next week, we're going to start fining. And there might be a en masse fining of like 20 teams next week if that happens again.
Hmm. Hey, I want to go back to Titans real fast, Charles. You talking about what they can do to improve, and Clowney, certainly agree. I mean, if it, the knee's been bothering him all year, so maybe he's out for a bit and comes back. Right. But there's really nothing else out there. I want to throw three guys who I don't believe are retired, but who may potentially be able to help a team. Of course, Cam Wake is a guy the Titans signed, and you know, he had a serious injury. He was done. He's out there. Clay Matthews, I actually didn't realize he's only 34. I swear he's like 40, but he's out there. Yeah. And then Terrell Suggs. Any of those three guys you think remotely possible, maybe if not for the Titans, for anyone, that they could possibly be back in this league at any point?
I think Matthews is washed. I really do. You know, just I think when he was with the Rams, on his way out the door, I talked to some personnel there, and they were just like, yeah, they didn't feel like he really had anything left. You know, Wake, I don't know. It really, to me, Tack McKinley is a guy who, you know, the Atlanta Falcons cutting him loose. I think what's interesting about Tack is that I remember when the Falcons played the Cowboys, and he absolutely gave them everything that they could handle. And after they ended up winning that game, I was talking to somebody at the Cowboys, and he was like, we kind of got lucky that McKinley got hurt, because their right tackle could not handle the guy. And it changed the entire complexion of how their offense could function once he went off the field. Now, what's interesting about McKinley was the Falcons, I talked to some other teams, and they were like, we offered them something for Tack, and they turned it down. And then the Falcons cut him because McKinley was so upset he didn't get traded, and, you know, chirped, obviously, at the organization. And so you have these teams that are like, and I've asked them, like, are you putting in? Are you going to put in a claim on him? And these teams are like, yeah, but we think a lot of the league's going to claim him. Like, I talked to an AFC team that was interested in him, and they're like, we think half the league could put in a claim on him. Now, what's interesting is you do see some teams now putting in claims on guys and then dealing them. And I think McKinley is a guy that you could have some teams that are putting in claims and then calling other teams saying, hey, did you offer the Falcons something? If you did, we're going to claim the guy, and we're willing to trade him to you. And so I actually think that McKinley could be a guy that could help. You know, he's got talent. You know, I think it was just a situation where he started to tune guys out. I don't think he would be super expensive in terms of, like, maybe flipping something for him if the right team, you know, puts in a claim on him. But as far as the guys that are off the field, I'll be honest with you, man, I don't know. I have no idea what these guys have, other than the one out of that trio that you gave me. The one guy I remember having a really long conversation about was Clay Matthews, and the the Rams dealing with him really came out of that feeling like he was really done.
And now, Charles, Ben Roethlisberger of the Steelers placed on the reserve COVID list. Now two quarterbacks in the AFC North on that list. So COVID continuing to impact this NFL season.
Yeah, and it's, you know, the and particularly with the quarterbacks. Now, what's interesting is after Matt Stafford, he's had a, you know, Matt Stafford had a couple false positives, and that's, it's the first thing teams are asking is, like, is this a false positive? Like, let's make sure, let's test it out over a couple of days and find out, you know, whether or not these are false positives or not. But this is what's really interesting about COVID with the NFL is when you talk to teams and you say, we're continuing to move forward and the league's not really, the league has stopped sort of panicking at all in terms of the league office. It's like, they're not really panicking at all unless there's a massive outbreak. And I've said, like, how do you, like, when you talk to the league or you're kind of having these discussions about what to do when certain things happen, like, what is this like now? And I've had a couple of teams tell me basically the indication we've gotten is, hey, we increased your practice squad size. Treat it like an injury. Like, it's just treat it like an injury. Somebody has COVID. Make sure it doesn't spread and treat it like a, hey, you know, the guy's out this week because he, you know, he dinged his knee or whatever. Like, it's weird to say that, but that's kind of how the NFL has pushed teams to operate. Like, hey, you come out of games sometimes, you lose 3-4 guys. Like, COVID should be no different. If you're midweek and you lose 3-4 guys, you better have the, you know, street free agent list and the in-house, you know, resources to deal with that. That's how the NFL is sort of pushing teams to start to look at COVID. Just don't let the massive outbreak happen. But if the one-off happens, and even if it's a quarterback, sometimes you lose quarterbacks for a week. Deal with it and move on.
Charles Robinson from Yahoo Sports has been our guest here on Robbie and Retro. Charles, great stuff as always, man. We appreciate you taking time to join us.
Absolutely. Thanks for having me, guys.
Absolutely. Charles Robinson from Yahoo Sports. When we come back, we'll react a little bit to the breaking news in the NFL with Ben Roethlisberger going on the reserve COVID list for the Steelers. Also get back into the Titans as well. That's next. This is Robbie and Rex Road here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Tune into this weekend's NFL Game of the Week on 102.5 The Game, brought to you by Red Spirits and Wine in Bellevue and Gary Force Acura. This Sunday's NFL Game of the Week is the San Francisco 49ers taking on the New Orleans Saints. Coverage begins at 3 p.m. with a 3:25 p.m. kickoff. Welcome back in. Robbie and Rex Road here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. And Joe, we brought it up a little bit with Charles Robinson at the end of his last segment there from Yahoo Sports. The Steelers have announced that Ben Roethlisberger has been placed on the reserve COVID-19 list, making him the second AFC North quarterback. Baker Mayfield also placed on that list the other day. Now, it seems like both Baker Mayfield and Ben Roethlisberger not testing positive for COVID-19. They have been deemed to have been in close contact or high-risk contact with someone who has. So Roethlisberger, Mayfield have a chance this week, as long as they continue to test negative, to come off that list. But still, big news in the NFL, especially with the Steelers team that with Ben Roethlisberger this year, the last remaining undefeated team in the league, 8-0.
Yeah, we get further and further away from when the Titans were the focal point of all COVID discussions in the NFL. Also, how far away are we from, what was it, first 3 weeks? Like, nothing.
Yeah.
Like, oh, this
is going really well.
This is going to go through, no problem. This, obviously, if you're the Steelers, you hope this turns out like Matthew Stafford, which it was contact tracing. And then it was negative test. He traveled. I think he traveled alone. He played. Didn't matter for the Lions, but
no.
It would certainly matter for the Steelers. You would think against the Bengals if Roethlisberger can play.
Yeah, and so we'll have to continue to monitor that for the rest of the week. If he tests negative, then he'll be able to play on Sunday. And anytime you go this deep into an NFL season and you've still got a team that's undefeated, everybody starts to turn their eyes towards the Steelers, or I think back to 08 with the Titans when they started 10-0 and say, okay, could this be a team that finishes the season 16-0? I don't anticipate that happening with the Steelers, but certainly if Roethlisberger can't go, even if it is the Bengals, I mean, that would certainly hurt your chances to win.
Yeah.
We saw last year what Pittsburgh was without Roethlisberger at quarterback. It was not very good.
Yeah, exactly. And yet they still won their share with that. But, yeah, I hadn't even really – I've sort of, it's funny because you're right. Usually you get to this point in a season, if a team's 8-0, like we were talking about that until the Chiefs lost to the Raiders, for sure. Like, that looks like a team that, watch out. But, hey, they are undefeated.
Do you think they could run the table?
They have.
Can they give?
They have one more against the Ravens, right?
72 Dolphins a run for their money. Yes, yeah. They do have one more against the Ravens.
I mean, they would be the worst. I mean, they're a good team. Don't get me wrong. They're a good team. They're a contender, but that is not a team that's a 16-0 contender. They do also have the Bills. So the Bills obviously look great against Seahawks. So Ravens, Bills, Colts, Browns. I mean, I know they beat the Browns 1-0, but maybe one of these years. Baker and the Browns will stand up to the Steelers. It's like they just shrink into a corner and just ball up and let them do whatever they want.
Browns fans do not like to see Ben Roethlisberger on the other side. It's going very well for the Steelers since he's been the quarterback there against Cleveland.
I think the Steelers, I think they, gosh, they are still going to go like 14-2, 13-3.
Yeah.
You know?
I mean, they're pretty good.
But will the Chiefs lose again?
If they just mail it in, maybe. Like if Mahomes doesn't play the last week, yeah.
That probably. Raiders game was weird. It's an example of this league. You know, things can go sideways with any team for a couple hours.
Yeah.
But that game was – he was, like, uncomfortable.
He was.
They couldn't protect him against the Raiders. It was just like, what?
Yeah. Speaking of uncomfortable, we talked earlier in the show about the Titans' offense without Taylor Lewan and the impact it's had – on their production as a whole. Points per game-wise, they've dropped around 10 points per game since Taylor Lewan has been out of the lineup. I think 32.8 was what they were averaging with Lewan in, now to 22.6 with Lewan out of the lineup. What have you seen out of the Titans offensively with Lewan being out the last three games?
They do look quite a bit different. I think they look different. They are more limited. You're naturally more limited. There's a high premium, not just on protecting your quarterback with a great left tackle, but in being able to just say, okay, top pass rushers in the league, we can block him with this guy. Now, this guy can go do something else. And right now they have people who have to help the offensive line. That's against top competition. So it may change week to week. Maybe it even changes a little bit Thursday. But I think that's just a big factor here. And it's not – any kind of a knock on Tyson Brilo, who I think has done a good job, but he's not Taylor Lewan. And so you're going to lose something. And I think that's part of it. And I think it's affected Tannehill a little bit.
I think it has. And I think a big guy that it's affected the last 3 weeks specifically has been Jonnu Smith. And we've talked about, you know, having to hang in there and chip and maybe not being able to be as involved in the passing game as he would like. You know, Jonnu Smith had two catches on Sunday. Both on the same drive, back-to-back plays against Chicago. That was it. I mean, he caught the ball, got it down to the 2-yard line, and then scored on the touchdown on the next play. But other than that, I mean, he was a ghost in the passing game. And I think a lot of that not necessarily falls on Jonnu Smith. It's just what the Titans are asking him to do right now, helping in, maybe chipping a little bit more than he's used to, and not being free to run those routes that we saw earlier in the season where he was a touchdown machine the first 4 or 5 games.
Yeah. If you're going to leave a tight end in, it's going to be Jonnu Smith. It's not going to be Anthony Firkser. You know, Firkser is out there for one thing, really. Although he's come in and chipped in on blocking too. But Jonnu's a guy who can help in that way. Mykole Pruitt, who of course is out, is another guy. Now they're going to bring in Jeff Swaim. But yeah, I think there's a guy who absolutely is impacted, and sometimes receivers are too. Even just a chip, I mean that can throw off a play. That changes what you're doing. And makes you a little bit less explosive.
When we come back, are we viewing a certain Titans star player through maybe an unfair lens? We'll discuss that on the other side of the break. This is Robbie and Rex Road here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Welcome back in. Robbie and Rex Road here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Robbie Stanley, Joe Rex Road, Ryan Porth here with you on this Tuesday. And Joe, we went through your article on The Athletic earlier, handing out some grades to position groups for the Titans, but I want to focus in specifically on one guy in particular, and that is Derrick Henry, which, as you mentioned, second in the league in rushing right now through 8 games this season, over 800 yards on the season, trails only Dalvin Cook of the Minnesota Vikings in the rushing title race. But I think some Titans fans are still waiting to see the consistent big pop runs that we've seen from Derrick Henry, like we saw in the Houston game where he gallivanted off down the field for 90 yards, and the highlight reel stiff arms and all these different things that we've grown accustomed to seeing from Derrick Henry. As you evaluate his play specifically this year, what have you made of it so far, and do you think there's still room for improvement there with Derrick Henry?
I mean, for him, the way he's played the last few weeks, no. I mean, there's room for, like, more yards in a particular game. He would have had more yards against the Steelers, but then they never got the ball back. He would have had more yards against the Bengals, but their defense was so crappy in that game that they had to throw and take him off the field. The Bears did a really good job against him. I mean, whenever the guy gets half a crease, I think he's through it. Again, that's just a great stat. 75 yards after contact of his 68 yards.
That's pretty good.
I mean, so the way he is performing, I don't think you get better than this. You know, when he gets a chance to go, he goes. I can't remember the last time. I agree with Porter early in the year. Those first couple games, I thought he did look at times like, boy, he didn't quite have the explosion there that I'm used to seeing. But I don't think it's missing now. I think it's just you are running into pack boxes, and it's hard to gain yards the way teams are defending them. Which, if you flip that around, then you could say, well, Ryan Tannehill, this is why it's good to be the quarterback of the Tennessee Titans.
But, Porth, you said earlier, talking about the running game as a whole, you probably give it a B-plus at this moment. Is there something specifically about Derrick Henry that you're waiting on to hit that next level?
Well, when he's faced quality defenses, he has been slowed down. And, you know, early in the season, it felt like the yardage total was being inflated a little bit because his touches total or his carries total was being inflated. I mean, he's on pace to exceed his rushing yards total from last season, which he led the NFL with 1,500 plus yards. He's on pace to exceed 1,600 if you just double his stats, but he's also on pace to have 60 more carries this season. And his yards per carry is not what it was last year or the year before, which 4.6 yards per carry isn't horrible. It's not 5.1 from last year. And there just hasn't been that week after week where he is clearly the best player on the field for the Titans, like he has been at stretches in the second halves of the last couple seasons.
I still think he is. But.
So I guess my point is that I think there really is another level to Derrick Henry from a production standpoint that we just haven't seen yet. And maybe it is unfair to grade him off of what he did last season in certain games. But and it's not a knock on Derrick, and the B-plus grade goes for the whole running back core, not just
sure.
Derrick Henry. But I just think there's another level to him. And we all know that as Titans fans. That's just my opinion. I think he's been very good. Do I think he's been great all the time? No.
See, last year when he went on that run and – you know, like unbelievable run. You got to remember Jack Conklin's at right tackle, and he was a great run blocker. With Nate Davis having figured it out, with Luan on the other side, with Saffold having figured it out, and that is just flat out better than what's blocking for him right now. It just is. So I think, but it's hard to separate with when you're talking about a running back. It's hard to separate that. I mean, you know, you are dependent on those people in front of you, no matter how good you think you are. Because I think. When he gets the ball in his hands, I think he's as good as he's ever been right now.
Well, what he did last year in the first couple rounds against the Patriots and the Ravens, those are two elite defenses where he went buku on. This year against the elite defenses, he doesn't have that same offensive line and the production is down. So I think there's absolutely merit to what you're saying.
Yeah, it's hard to separate it, you know? I just, like when I try to just look at him, because certainly we know early in his career you could see it. Oh, he's popping it outside, he shouldn't have, you got to cut that one up. You know, going out of bounds or whatever, trying to hit the home run, all that stuff. That's why he couldn't take hold of that starting job until later than midway through his third year. And I think for the most part, since he figured it out, he's been the same guy, you know, just with different opportunities. I mean, to me, it's like, is he missing something? You know, sometimes you can see a running back, like, oh, man, he missed that cutback lane. Or he just couldn't beat that guy. You got to break that one tackle. I don't know. When I see him like the Bears, they were swarming him. You know, the Bears were just they were not letting him breathe.
Pittsburgh did the same thing.
They did. Yeah. And I think the other
until that one drive, you know.
Sure. And I think the other thing you got to keep in mind here is he did win the NFL rushing title last year. So teams are going to really hone in on stopping Derrick Henry. I mean, what did we see the first 4 weeks of the season? I mean, guys, you're playing 8-9 guys in the box on almost every snap when Derrick Henry is in the game. So, yeah, we've seen him break through that at times, and we've seen him, you know, it really haven't mattered if once he gets to the second level. But the more success he's had in this league, last year was the first year where he was really the guy. I mean, he 2 years ago, the last four games, he looked really good. But last year was the first time that he was the guy. And then the playoffs, he just absolutely took over and took the league by storm. This is really the first year where heading into the season, teams are like, when they start studying tape of the Titans, the first thing they look at is Derrick Henry. And I think that has been a factor this year as well. I mean, the production, it's still going to be really good. I mean, he's on pace for 16 touchdowns on the ground. It's what he had last year. He's on pace for more yards than he had last year. Also, to Poor's point, on pace for more carries as well. But I think that's an underrated part of this discussion is teams are really honing in on trying to make Derrick Henry not the guy that beats them and live with getting beat by Ryan Tannehill.
Right. And even last year in the playoffs, you know, I mean, again, the Patriots kept those two safeties high almost the entire game. It was pretty much like Belichick's thing was basically, we'll let them have that to a certain extent. You know, that was their defensive. It was different for the Ravens. And I just, not to take anything away from Derrick Henry last year, but I really think a lot of that was just domination. That offensive line was operating at a peak level that I don't think they ever have reached this year, even when they had everyone healthy, you know. And it's hard to judge those two things in a running game, but they're both absolutely essential. But you're right. I mean, more attention. And then you do assume that at some point Ryan Tannehill keeps playing like he's doing. And I mean, teams just get put in a conflict. And so it's maybe not every week you guarantee you're going to have these stacked boxes, but it seems like we see it every week.
Let's go back to our text line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. Ben texts in, says, Henry won't win the rushing title this year without Lawan. Maybe finishes in the top five. Called shot. The Titans use their first-round pick on the offensive line next year. I would hope they don't do that. I really hope not.
Spend your first-round pick on a pass rusher.
I really hope they don't go offensive line. That would not go over well.
I mean, I guess I'm trying to think of, you know, you've got Saffold locked up. You know, Ben Jones is getting up there. Nate Davis is on his rookie deal, and he's getting better. He's pretty good. Yeah. Yeah, I mean, I guess if Isaiah Wilson demonstrates like he's never going to be a professional football player.
But even then, that, don't do it.
Even then, go get a pass rusher.
What do you make of Derrick Henry not winning the rushing title this year? Maybe top five.
Well, those two are way beyond everybody else. So he would have to really fall off to not be top two. Long way to go, but I tell you what. You look at the schedule, and you again.
He's going to win the rushing title.
You look at the Lions. You look at the Jaguars. Some of these teams that are going to be playing out the string. He's going to.
I will call my shot right now. Derrick Henry will absolutely win the rushing title.
Okay,
over Dalvin Cook
comfortably because Cook's got it. I mean, Cook's got a chance, man.
Cook gets hurt all the time. Cook won't make it through the rest of the season, and he still has played one less game than Derrick Henry anyway, and will finish with one less game. Derrick Henry wins the rushing title.
Okay, called shot. Put it down. Nah, he'd be my favorite too. So what is he? So he's on pace for 364 on the carries counter. And again, that
he's at 182 right now. Yes.
Yeah, that pace is going. I did that math in my head, by the way. That pace is going down. Of course, he was on pace for over 400. But yeah, so last year 303. And I bet you it ends up. It probably ends up like in the 320s.
I agree. Yeah.
You know, like they'll keep because they've got to try to preserve him, but. I think watching him play, and again, I think he's gotten better catching the ball too. He's never going to be great in that way, but watching him play, I think he's vintage Derrick Henry right now. Like the touchdown against the Texans, I don't think there's any other back in the league who can do that, who can make that play.
No.
The low stiff arm and then actually outrunning
everyone. Then just separate
everyone.
From people. Yeah, let's go back to our text line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. Jeff texts in my years watching football, I've noticed that the faster a running back hits the line with 1 second as he hits the goal, the much better chance he has to get through the line into the secondary while the D-line is still engaged with their block. 1 full second being the goal to hit the line, 1,001, and you're through the line. The lateral movement, the dancing, the hesitation is a run stopper. Just hitting the hole with speed and getting through the hole. Do we think Derrick Henry's gotten better in that area?
Well, okay, but so there's two types of blocking. There's gap blocking, there's zone blocking.
Right.
And they do some gap stuff, but I mean, for the most part, they're a zone blocking team, which means you are picking out a cutback lane in a lot of cases. So it's not that kind of running. I do think when they have a gap scheme and he's just go downhill, he's imposing, but it's not like you can't look at every running play by Derrick Henry and say, hit the line right now. That's not the scheme. I mean, the
right.
scheme is that you are picking up a crackback or a lane. It's not necessarily a crackback, but you're picking out a lane that's your vision, and it's all part of it's all tied together. So sometimes it's like he's dancing, then boom, then he hits it hard there, and he's great at that.
Well, the 94 yarder he had against Houston is a perfect example of that.
Right.
I mean, it was a cutback, and he got through the hole, and
it was a massive hole,
yeah,
because Nate Davis took his guy and put him in the third row, right?
Yeah,
I mean, he could have gotten through half that hole, but that hole was this big because of Nate Davis.
Exactly. So there are different ways that the Titans try to run the ball, but I think one thing we've learned about Derrick Henry that in the running game, pretty much any way you want to run the ball, he can be pretty effective.
It's going to be really interesting on Thursday. The Colts are right up there at the top against the Rust. They may not be the most imposing pass-rushing team, but they are a great run-stopping team, and I can't wait to see that. Two of the next three games, him trying to run against that defense.
When we come back, could Nashville have an NBA team this year? We'll discuss that on the other side. This is Robbie and Rex Road here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. I almost don't even want to start talking coming back into this segment. Just let Travis Tritt do the work for all of us. Don't you love it, Rex Road? Aren't you you going to go buy a Travis Tritt t-shirt?
Let it wash over me.
Are you becoming less of a country music hater the more you're here? And this is like actual country music, not whatever it is they toss out there today.
You count that as actual country music.
That is correct.
Yeah, I mean, here's my thing on country music. I will go
watch it
live, and I like it, you know, because good live music, good musicians.
Sure.
I probably won't go out of my way to listen to much of it.
Okay.
I mean, unless you
I can accept that.
Unless, like, you can count, like, my expansive Allman Brothers and Lynyrd Skynyrd collections, but those aren't.
No.
It's country rock.
Yeah, it's a little
Tom
different.
Petty.
Yeah. It's not, I mean, good stuff.
Right.
But it's not
country music.
Yeah, exactly.
There's something lost in the crossover there to like Travis Tritt. I'm like, okay, I'm all right. It's cool. I respect
Are
it,
you
though.
About to have some Travis Tritt slander right in front of me?
I like alliteration. You know, Breon Borders,
so
Travis Tritt.
It has
Tritt.
Nothing to do with his musical ability.
Tier Tart, Travis Tritt. Okay. All high performers.
Thank you. Appreciate that. I'll make you vice president of the Travis Tritt fan club.
So you're the president of the Travis Tritt Fan Club and the Marcus Mariota Hater Club.
I'm the president of many things, yes.
Okay.
And the 110 degrees in the middle of the summer
yeah,
fan club.
Like those days, too. I'm a big fan of
the heat.
I would
at least be your treasurer for that one.
Yeah, big fan of the heat. Don't like the cold whatsoever. Cannot do it. I'm a southern boy. I don't like cold.
Hey, bring it.
I'm with you all the way.
Thank you.
Never going back.
Bring the 60-degree days.
60's not cold. I'm talking like what we're about to experience.
You even complain when it gets down to 60 degrees.
Well, I do because I prefer it to be 85, 90.
Yeah.
But
of course.
60 is not – you're not going to hear me, like, just yell about 60 degrees. I go outside and, like, cuss when it's 30 degrees, just at random objects of how cold it is.
Dude, like
that could be a character problem, but
– getting into a car when it's zero in the morning, you used to do that day after day after day. Why?
Yeah, Michigan doesn't sound like a fun place.
And then, like, go on road trips, you know, to Minnesota, Wisconsin, and I felt like Michigan was warm. Leave it all behind.
You know who also might be a fan of the warmer winters here in Nashville? Members of the Toronto Raptors.
Oh, boy.
How about that for a transition right there? It's possible that Nashville could host the Toronto Raptors this year for the NBA season. Now, as we know right now, the Canadian border shut down, so that poses a problem for a team playing in Toronto for professional sports. We saw the Blue Jays in Major League Baseball. They moved to Buffalo, played their home games there this past season in Major League Baseball. Nashville being discussed as a possibility for the Raptors to come to town and play their NBA season here at Bridgestone Arena. Joe, what do you make of that possibility, and what do you think a potential interest level in the Raptors around here would be should they decide to move to Nashville?
Yeah, I don't know. Good job by our buddy Adam Vingan on this story. And apparently Raptors officials last week visited Nashville. And there's a few other cities being like Kansas City, Tampa, they're all over the place that are being floated. Of course, they want to have easy flights to the Atlantic Division rivals. I don't know. Would anyone notice? Like, would anyone care? Would people be flocking to go see the Raptors? I mean, of course, we don't even know, like, what the availability would be, what they could do. But
I think people would care.
I think it'd be cool.
I mean, they're good.
Right.
So that helps.
And again, regardless of them, this means that various NBA stars are now coming into town to play.
Yeah.
I think it'd be cool, especially if people can go see them. I don't know if it's going to be like all of a sudden this – people of Nashville are going to love the Raptors forever after their 3 months here.
A whole bunch of, like a summer romance. A new generation of Raptors fans here in Nashville.
Pals with them forever.
Taking the state by storm. Move the Grizzlies out. Bring in the Raptors.
By the way, so the Grizzlies, you know, the one game, the East and West play one.
Yeah.
So now John Morant can come to Nashville. You have to watch him. And then that's where people should be permanently fans. Permanently fans of John Morant.
Let's go to our text
Embrace
line,
Memphis.
Driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. Heidi from Dixon texts in, if the Raptors play in Nashville, they'll have more Tennessee fans than the Grizzlies already. Move the Grizz to Nashville.
Every time Heidi from Dixon texts us, I'm thinking in terms of, okay, this is a Stillman Burn phone. That one doesn't really follow, though. But
the Grizzlies have a great following in West Tennessee.
They do.
I think the Grizzlies have a chance to have a following here, but maybe I'm
No, I think they
naive.
Do too, especially now with John Morant coming in.
I mean, we're past all the Nashville-Memphis hatred stuff, right? The Titans stuff.
No, that has not passed.
That not at all.
And it's mostly on the Memphis end than the Nashville.
Yeah,
end.
Memphis has got kind of a little sensitive when it comes to Nashville's success.
It's kind of like that one-sided rivalry where, you know, Nashville gets all the attention and everybody in Memphis is like, well, we've got Beale Street.
Yeah.
Who cares about Broadway? But I don't think Nashville people hate Memphis as much as Memphis people might hate Nashville.
Well, so I wrote something about this last year on a thing about John Morant and asked a bunch of people over there. And from their perspective, there's some thawing. And there's actually people over there, like they say, the Titans are now on the TV there. That didn't used to happen. You go to a bar during a Titans game, people are watching the Titans, cheering for the Titans. For years, that apparently was like, forget that, because obviously all that happened. So there's some sign, right? I mean, there's some people that are always going to be bitter.
And they're bitter in Memphis. I mean, Penny's bitter about Rick Barnes. I mean, it's a bitter mindset out there.
Yeah, but Rick Barnes is at Nashville.
I know. I'm just saying. They're bitter about a lot of things out
Rick
there
Barnes
in Memphis,
is
man.
Bitter about Penny.
I think he is now, yeah.
Rick Barnes should schedule Memphis
every
year.
They should play
year.
Every single year. They really should.
Yeah.
But no, I think the NBA coming to town, even if it is very temporary and a limited capacity of fans, getting an opportunity to, number one, watch a good team in the Raptors, who they should be very good. But number two, like you said, have some big-name players, some of the biggest superstars in sports come in here that don't normally get a chance to do so. I think it'd be awesome.
Like, yeah.
Imagine going to watch LeBron in Nashville.
Can you imagine what Munson will be like out there all day waiting to get in the building? No, that'd be awesome. What would this be like for the Preds? Is this a pain in the butt for them? For this? I mean, we there are other cities that have an arena that shares an NBA and NHL team, but what does this mean for the
Preds?
I
mean, it could be a little bit more difficult this year just because of the flexibility you may need to have in terms of COVID and what's been going on in college football that we talked about on the show today. Like, it's just a different year. So I don't know if there's an ideal scenario, but, I mean, I think for 1 year it would be cool.
Whole bunch of fumigating.
Yeah.
Clean out those locker rooms day after day.
Right? Day after
as
day.
Long as the
and
Raptors.
They would use different locker rooms.
Sure.
You
but
think.
Just as long as the Raptors wear their throwback jerseys from the late 90s.
Yeah, those are pretty sick.
Those are pretty cool.
The purple and black.
I think we've learned 90s jerseys in general pretty good for the most part, especially in the NBA.
Some. Well, the Pistons had their teal awful stuff. Yeah. But, yeah, there's some good ones.
Detroit typically ruins a lot of things.
what was worse, the Detroit teal and maroon and weird gold jerseys or the New York Islanders fisherman jerseys?
Oh, those are pretty bad, too.
Two long-established brands going the complete opposite direction.
Sometimes creative is bad. Like, we're talking about Jeremy Pruitt maybe getting a little bit more creative, running the ball, throwing the ball, maybe combining both. That's probably a good form of creative.
Peanut butter and jelly.
Yeah, that's great. But sometimes creative can take a disappointing turn.
Well,
we see it in jerseys sometimes.
We don't have time for me to go off on it, but college football teams that have great jerseys, like take Ohio State, Tennessee, whoever you want, and have to have these Nike ridiculous
smoky gray,
awful, stupid looking. I mean, recruits like them. You know, you'll get recruits in your jerseys that all your fans like.
Especially if you know how to run and throw at the same time. They get as many recruits as you want there. That's going to do it for us today here on Robbie and Rex Road. We'll be back tomorrow to break down the Titans and the Colts. Darren Donick and Chase coming up next. This is ESPN 102.5 The Game.